Well, today is the start of the second week of September, a month that traditionally means a transition back to school, the closing out of the summertime. And our first guest today has thought a lot about the way that the seasons align with different aspects of our lives, from cultural traditions to the sports we play and the objects that we buy. Tanya Davidson teaches sociology at Carleton. She's the editor of a new book called Seasonal Sociology. This is a collection of essays examining everyday seasonal practices in Canada, how people work, celebrate, consume, and cope. Tanya Davidson spoke about seasonal sociology with Information Morning producer Don Monroe.
So seasons are one of these things that are so just like, yeah, they just exist. It comes from the earth and the, you know, the rotating of the axis. But actually, we can make sense of it seasons sociologically. The idea that we count time in this sort of calendar year, this is a historic invention. We didn't always imagine time in terms of years or months. And the idea that Canada has four seasons is similarly a social idea that has impacts and that we put a lot of cultural importance on. For that reason, we can make sense of seasons and seasonal traditions sociologically.
Okay, we're going to get into the seasons in just a minute, but can you give me an example of what you're thinking?
Yeah, so we just finished summer, and summer is imagined, like, in our cultural imaginary to be this time of great sort of, like, fun and frivolity. And this has a history, and it also is very much a sort of ideological idea that is not experienced in the way that it's imagined. So summer is actually a season of labor for most people, right? And there's a lot of sort of unpaid labor of social reproduction that goes on in summer as well. So here I'm talking about childcare. So the idea that, like, it makes sense for kids to go to school for 10 months of the year and have this 2-month break, that might have made sense in other historic moments when there was, like, one stay-at-home parent, right, that could manage that. But now, managing children's 2-month break is actually quite a bit of work. It's quite complicated and stressful for a lot of parents. So this is a place where this idea of our cultural idea of the seasons and people's experiences of the seasons can be at odds. So this is something that a sociologist takes up, Patricia Albanez takes this up in a chapter in the book.
Okay, so that's a quick thought about summer. We're heading into fall, of course. What observations or thoughts do you and the contributors to this new book, Seasonal Sociology, have to say about fall?
Well, we have a lot of great chapters. We have a chapter in fall, a Labor Day chapter, it's a sociology of work chapter. We have a chapter on the sociology of pumpkin spice lattes, which is very sort of exciting for students and a lot of people who enjoy pumpkin spice. So here, Sonia Bookman is the author, and she writes about how Starbucks have managed to appropriate what she calls commercial appropriation, how they've been able to appropriate a much older folk understanding of pumpkins in fall. So today, the majority of pumpkins that are grown for autumn decor. We don't actually eat, when we never actually ate pumpkins, they're more like a sort of waste vegetable. But also, for a long time, since the 18th century, pumpkins have been part of this sort of agrarian nostalgia in American culture. So people were nostalgic even hundreds of years ago for an even earlier time when people were imagined to be sort of more rural and this whole set of ideas about wholesomeness that are imbued in what was also understood to be kind of an ugly, useless vegetable.
So are we finding comfort in pumpkin spice? Was that her conclusion?
Yeah. So she talks about how, so there's a lot of nostalgia wrapped up in the sort of pumpkin spice that then corporations are like tapping into, and then it becomes part of consumer identity. So then she talks about the hashtag PSL and how people would take all these selfies. And you know it's fall when not only are you having a pumpkin spice latte, but you're taking a selfie with your pumpkin spice latte, preferably maybe in a pumpkin patch. So there's this whole sort of like cultural traditions that are both from the people, there's like bottom up and top down. So it's like folk culture and consumer culture sort of collaborate to produce this like overwhelming fall experience. for people.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Also, she also talks about pumpkin spice creep, that pumpkin spice latte season is getting earlier and earlier. And one of the, like, there are a couple of things that complicate this. So she talks about how in 2020, foot traffic to Starbucks that summer was very low because of the pandemic. And that season, that was the year that pumpkin spice latte season began at the end of August. And some people were quite outraged by that.
Pumpkin spice creep. I like that. Now, I think you can argue that the one season that is synonymous with Canada, or at least was for generations, is winter. So what do the essays in your new book say about our relationship to winter?
Well, we have some great chapters in winter. We have a chapter that is about sports and hockey. This is by Nicole Neverson. She invokes what sociologists call the great sport myth. So it's this idea that sport is good, that athletes are good, and anyone associated with sport is sort of uplifted, that there's this big community uplift. But of course, with hockey, we just saw that sort of junior hockey sexual assault case in London, Ontario. There's so many examples to show that there's all sorts of problems with professional sport. So upholding it as this sort of uncritiqued or uncriticable social good is a problem. So that's one winter chapter. We have another winter chapter that is very compelling for students, and it is about seasonal affective disorder in winter. And here, the author, Alyssa Overend, introduces readers to this idea of medicalization. So this is the idea that sociologists talk about that refers to how more and more of just like human experience are becoming imagined as problems that require medical solutions. So she talks about, so a lot of people think it's like between 2 and 4% of Canadians have seasonal affective disorder, something that probably our grandparents never, or parents didn't know that that term, may have experienced it. And her big takeaway is not that experiences of being lethargic and gaining weight and all these things that are imagined as symptoms or are called symptoms of seasonal affective disorder. Her point is not that they don't exist, but it's to question why we must make this a medical problem. So she sort of advocates for a return to a natural or understanding a broad range of emotions, and that sadness, if it's seasonal or not, is part of the human experience that may not, and it's not a whole brush, like it's not to discount people's experiences, but it may not be need to be understood as a medical problem. But maybe just a broader part of our experience of seasons and of being human.
And that's in the chapter on winter.
That's in the winter section, yeah.
Well, I'm Don Munro, and you're listening to Cape Breton's Information Morning here on CBC. And I'm in conversation with Tanya Davidson about the new book, Seasonal Sociology. It's a look at how Canada's seasons shape our lives in different ways. Okay, Tanya, we've touched on three seasons. What do the essays in your book say about spring?
Oh, well, in spring we have, so there's a great, in Vancouver, Vancouver has some of the largest Vaisakhi parades, and this is a sick seasonal or spring holiday that it marks the harvest season in the Punjab region in India. So sociologist Bonner Buffum talks about what these parades are like in Vancouver and Surrey, where they're very big. So here we can see, and he talks about these parades in relation to what sociologists broadly refer to as social solidarity or and collective effervescence. So these are ideas that when we come together for seasonal celebrations like these parades, but also for other seasonal parades, Santa Claus Parade, Canada Day Parade, they're marking the seasons. These are good opportunities to mark the seasons, but also they're good opportunities to feel like you belong to something bigger, that you're not just an isolated individual or in an isolated family, but you belong to maybe a neighborhood or a bigger, even a nation or something like that. So these seasonal traditions have meaning beyond the explicit marking of a season.
Huh. Now, earlier I mentioned winter, and I think there's an argument to be made that it's the one season that has traditionally been most associated with Canada. But what do you think the seasons overall and the warming of those seasons, perhaps, says about our national identity?
This is a question that a lot of people have. I think that one of the things that I would point to is there's a good chapter also in spring on maple tree tapping. So this is something that happens in spring. And we know that maple products are a big part of our identity, right? So this is a seasonal tradition that facilitates this creation of a national commodity, the maple stuff. But this is something that's it's actually pretty Ontario and Quebec where this happens. So we see the sort of central Canada dominance going on there. I would say one thing to go back to winter that Canadians will need to reckon with is that not only are the ideas of seasons socially produced, but we collectively as a species through our human activity are impacting the material reality of seasons. So winters are getting milder, summers are getting hotter. We now know summer is forest fire season, right? So it's like, which I know you have been experiencing a lot in Nova Scotia this summer. And so these seasonal changes are a response to human impacts of climate change. So this, when we think about winter as the season for Canadians, we're going to have to think about what it means when the Rideau Canal doesn't freeze all winter and we can't in Ottawa, which happened a few years ago. So we can't do this outdoor skating. Or when, ponds and lakes don't freeze. So the idea that you can easily put on skates and learn how to skate and play hockey, it's becoming more and more sort of limited to people who have access to arena time. So this idea of a shared winter culture is shifting with climate change. So that's something we're going to have to pay attention to collectively in the present as well.
Now, this book has several different topics and contributors. What is something that the reader will come away with, you think, when it comes to thinking about the seasons in our country?
I think one thing that they will come away with, something that is consistent throughout, is that we do not, even if we imagine we have shared conditions, like the weather talk is something we talk about because it's something we presumably all share, right? Like you meet a neighbor in an elevator, you don't know anything, you talk about the weather. But actually, from reading this book, you'll see that while we might share some things, our experiences of the seasons are so incredibly marked by our other social realities, by our age and class and gender and race and all these things. So in this one chapter in this edition by Mark Hudson on forest fires, he talks about how about over 40% of the evacuated communities from forest fires have been Indigenous or majority Indigenous communities. So there's a bigger impact there. And the impacts of forest fire smoke are also felt more heavily among children and the elderly and other demographics. So while we do share some material realities of like the heat hits, all will hit our skin and the frost burn we might experience in some ways, our access to abilities to withstand climate change and access air conditioning, these things are still very socially structured.
Well, Tanya, I hope you have a wonderful fall, perhaps with lots of pumpkin spice lattes, and a great school year. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Great. Thanks a lot.